Okay, I'm Dale Jampgard. And I started coming up here in 1970 and been here about every 3 years over the years. So it feels much like home to me. And feels good to be here again. What I want to focus on during these sessions this week is, dare we walk in the newness of life? And so what I would like to do is start with you, because what these sessions will be about are really about you. And what will determine what this means is what it means to you. So what I'd like to have you do is take a few moments, I'm going to put on a little music, and just go into yourself and let come to you the images, the thoughts about what do you want from Jesus? What kind of hopes do you have? What do you want to be able to do because you know Jesus? And let it go. In other words, if you want to walk on water like Peter, say so. So don't limit yourself. But Jesus makes a lot of promises, and we're going to take a look at those. But first, let me just check with you. What would you like in relation to yourself from Jesus? How would you like to be different? What is it you hope for? And make this kind of a meditation, not a test.
Here's pencils.
Thank you. jot things down so that you can read them. The people that came in. We're just making a list of those things that we would want from Jesus. What is it that we hope for in our Christian faith? What is it that we want to be able to do? Okay, now let's just let those lists set for a bit. You can add to them as things come to your mind. But I'd like to begin by having some scripture portions read that at least give us a few samplings of the kind of language Jesus used in terms of what he wanted to bring to us. So let's begin on this side and go around. I passed out some Bibles and some verses. If you would read those, please.
Matthew 7:7-11. Ask and it will be given you. Search and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened for you. For everyone who asks receives, and everyone who searches finds. And for everyone who knocks, the door will be opened. Is there any among you who, if your child asks for bread, will give a stone? Or if the child asks for a fish, will give a snake? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good things to those who ask him?
Notice the definite language. It shall be given to you. Okay, next one.
Matthew 6:25-34. Therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you shall eat or what you shall drink, nor about your body, what you shall put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? And which of you, by being anxious, can add one cubit to his span of life? And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O ones of little faith? Therefore, do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be yours as well. Therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Let the day's own trouble be sufficient for the day.
What do you hear in that? What kind of promise?
I thought by turning everything over to God, then he provides all your needs.
Okay. Trust.
Trust. letting go of anxiety, fear.
Peace with what is. A certain acceptance.
Okay.
And certain letting, you know, not having control, but just, you know, that God's presence is supreme, that it's enough. Not our trials, just simply God's presence is enough.
Mm-hmm. So it is, seek the presence of God is one way to say it. Seek the reign of God. Seek the work of God. God is at hand. God is at work. Tune into that. Trust that that is happening. Begin to perceive it. And all the other things will come. Okay? Next one.
Matthew 10, verses 5 through 8. These 12 Jesus sent out, charging them, go nowhere among the Gentiles and enter no town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And preach as you go, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse lepers, cast out demons. You received without paying, give without pay.
Okay, what do you hear in that?
Go and do my work. Do it freely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what are some of the things that we, Jesus assumes we are able to do?
Quite a bit.
Preach, teach, heal, everything he did.
Yeah.
Raise the dead, cast out demons.
Mm-hmm.
Are you all set to go?
Well, we got to negotiate the compensation package. I'm not in there.
Do it without pay.
Yeah,
Okay, well, that's quite a good order that he has commissioned us to do. Next.
Another Matthew. Again, I say unto you, that if two of you shall agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven.
What do you hear in that?
The power of Christian community.
Yeah.
You have to have a lot of faith to think that you can really do those things that he's telling you to do.
What I hear in that is he's saying, Christian community, you can shape the future. I think said in a different language, we could say, you are co-creators with me. And so as you envision the future that you want to have happen, that what you pray for will have a significant effect on shaping that future. Okay, next.
I have Mark 16. I can't tell if there's supposed to be starting at 1 or at 15.
How many verses?
It's either 1 through 18 or 15 through 18.
15 through 18, let's take. There was a lot more here, but I had to cut it down.
Later he appeared to the 11 themselves as they were sitting at their table. And he upbraided them for their lack of faith and stubbornness, because they had not believed those who saw him after he had risen. And he said to them, go into all the world and proclaim the good news to the whole creation. The one who believes and who is baptized will be saved, but the one who does not believe will be condemned. All these signs will accompany those who believe. By using my name, they will cast out demons. They will speak in new tongues. They will pick up snakes in their hands. And if they drink any deadly thing, it will not hurt them. They will lay their hands on the sick, and they will recover.
Any takers? Want to drink something?
Saying that all over again.
Yes. A kind of protection, a kind of a power, ability that he seems to be promising. And that could really make a difference, I think, in the way we would function. Okay, next one.
Mark 11, 20-24. In the morning as they passed by, they saw the fig tree withered away to its roots. Then Peter remembered and said to him, Rabbi, look, the fig tree that you cursed has withered. Jesus answered them, have faith in God. Truly I tell you, if you say to this mountain, be taken up and thrown into the sea, and if you do not doubt it, doubt in your heart, but believe that what you say will come to pass, it will be done for you. So I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours.
What do you hear in that?
Ask and you shall receive it if you truly believe it and have the faith.
That our needs are met. That God understands our needs. Not our wants necessarily, but our needs. He knows our needs.
Okay.
When we name them, I mean, he satisfies them anyway, but certainly when we name them, there's power in them.
Why do you think he used a mountain?
That's so big that it's unbelievable that you can do that.
He really wants to stretch our vision, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Wow! If you say to a mountain, be moved, it will be moved.
The kind, if you truly believe it.
If you truly believe it. The kind of urgency in this language of Jesus, if you have faith, you can. Ask and it shall be given. Seek and you shall find. Notice the urgency about this. Okay, the next one.
John 14, 10 through 14. Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? The words that I say to you, I do not speak on my own, but the Father who dwells in me does his works. Believe me that I am in the Father and the Father is in me. But if you do not, then believe me because of the works themselves. Very truly I tell you, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do, and in fact will do greater works than these, because I am going to the Father. I will do whatever you ask in my name, so that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If in my name you ask me for anything, I will do it.
Greater works than I do, will you do? Now we've tended to say Jesus did the works he did to show that he was divine, that he was the Son of God. I'm wondering if he didn't do them in order to show us what our real human potential is when we live in faith. That he was trying to reveal to us the full richness of being fully human in God's image and fully in touch with the work and the reign of God. So once again, ask and it shall be given. And greater works can you do? Just think of what Jesus did. Raised dead, walked on water, calmed the storm. A lot. Okay, next one.
Acts 1:6. So when they had come together, they asked him, Lord, is this the time when you will restore the kingdom to Israel?
Keep going, please. Oh,
Acts
Acts 1:6.
Oh, go on and read the next part.
He replied, "It is not for you to know the times or periods that the Father has set by his own authority. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, in all Judea, and Samaria, and to the ends of the earth."
Okay, you shall receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you. Again, that promise of empowerment, capacity, ability to do, to make happen, to shape the future. Well, what do we do with this? That's pretty exciting stuff, isn't it? Are you experiencing this kind of excitement in your parish?
In some ways, yes. And in other ways, no.
Okay.
I would suggest for each willing to go to a certain depth of that and that commitment and that trust. It depends on that background and that works to how far we'll go. Some might go 2 inches into it, some 2 feet. Just depends.
Okay. It's my sense, as I've moved around to a lot of different churches and worked with a lot of people, that when we go to church on Sunday, we expect maybe we might learn something, but we really expect to walk out of that door the same as when we came in. We do not expect to be transformed. We don't expect to be different in the way we live our lives. And I'm concerned that if we expect little, that's maybe what we get. What do you notice happening? Do you think we expect any of this kind of real empowerment?
I think that goes to the question of why you go to church, maybe. I know up here they've been doing a session on Wednesday mornings based upon a book, and recently they discussed why go to church, and the majority of the participants just said for community, to be part of something. But I didn't hear, well, to do works with other people, to be supportive in carrying my belief system out. I didn't hear that from people. And maybe this audience is different.
And that it as a whole, it has more to do with satisfying our own needs, which certainly we have, rather, and caring for ourselves rather than the real challenge, the challenge of the Christian message is to focus on others. And that being a Christian isn't necessarily about what's good for us, but what's good, sacrificing ourselves for the good of others.
Okay.
And that's where that, you know, being transformed and being changed and being sent out. I mean, you're sent out into the world. You're sent out to transform the world, not just to come to church to feel good. But then on the same hand, we all have our own hurts, our own vulnerabilities, and certainly, you know, a church community helps us in that regard. So there's a duality there, you know. I mean, the church certainly needs to satisfy both ends, challenge us to go out and get the focus off of ourselves, but also to find community.
But beyond finding community, you go to worship because there's where Jesus is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think many people don't.
But Jesus is in there too.
Pardon?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't hear what you said.
No, but Jesus is out there too. Certainly Jesus is in there for us, but Jesus is out there.
Yeah, but the one place he promises to be is in the Word and the Sacrament, and I think that's what most people, many people don't understand, that if you want to find Jesus, you'll find him at worship. But unfortunately, what's woefully terrible in many churches is worship is so boring that the reality of Jesus' presence doesn't become very obvious to folks. The young people are leaving churches in droves because the church seems irrelevant to their life, and that's because they don't see Jesus when they go to worship. If it's just community, they can find community someplace else.
But I also believe you can find Jesus elsewhere as well.
True. I'm not saying that he doesn't exist other places, but he promises. The one place and the only place where he promises he'll be is in the Word and the Sacrament. And that's where he invites us to go.
But I was still saying he challenges. He sends us out and he challenges us to be filled, to go out, mm-hmm. to bring Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
For us to transform the world, to leave our churches. And to bring the presence of Jesus and humanity out to the world so that Jesus can be brought.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly he can be found elsewhere, where we least expect him.
Mm-hmm.
And we can see grace at work everywhere. And that God is at work everywhere, if we only would look for him. And as Christians, perhaps that's our calling, because as we go out as Christians, we're being sent to bring that presence. We can find the presence in the sacraments, but for those who don't have a connection to the church, you know, those sacraments don't mean anything.
Well, I agree. I don't think you're understanding me. I feel like there's tension between you and I. I'm talking about people who come to church mm-hmm. who don't seem to realize the reality of the fact that Jesus is really there.
Sure.
And they come to church, you know, like you say, you know, do we expect to be changed? If Jesus is there, then, whoa, you know, there's a lot of things that... he'd be looking at me and saying, well, Margie, you've got to fix that, you know, but do I even allow him in when I go to worship?
Yeah. And then what? Then the question becomes, and then what? What's the change? Then what? You know, is there more?
Well, that's where the sending out goes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's many that go to be filled, you know,
mm-hmm.
community-wise, spiritually, I mean, because that's the promise, and yet they don't... And, you know, I'm guilty of it, too. A lot of times I walk out and, you know, thankful for being filled, mm-hmm. but not carrying out the tasks that were put before me.
Mm-hmm. And if we're changed, you know, and I agree, and I do that as well. I mean, I think, you know, that's our fallenness, our brokenness. We all have a tendency to do that. You know, and certainly I'm no different.
Now, I asked those who came in early to make a list of things you hoped for. Did you ask for much? Okay. Yes.
The first thing I listed, I hadn't really thought about that question ever before, I guess, in quite that way. What do I want from Jesus? And as I reflected on it, it seemed to me that what I most want from Jesus is to learn how to be fully human. Because I think that's who Jesus is. And you made the point a little earlier that we often think Jesus has power because of his divinity, but I guess I like to think that he has power because of his full humanity, his unbroken humanity, his sinlessness,
mm-hmm.
and that we can tap into at least some of that power to be more authentically human.
Okay.
That gives me a lot of encouragement. And then I think from that, well, the second thing I put down is what I really need to learn also from Jesus is how to love my neighbor as I love myself. And this both ends. It's not that we don't love ourselves or fill our own needs anymore, but we do both.
Mm-hmm.
And
as one, also the other. They go together.
Okay.
I can't really love my neighbor very effectively if I don't love myself.
Then we become just martyrs.
Yeah.
Okay, so you want to be able, you want to be given the ability to love your neighbor.
Yeah.
Or set free to love your neighbor. Okay. Okay.
All the time or just part of the time? Or just some of the neighbors?
Well, that's the tricky question. Which neighbors to love today? Because sometimes you have to make choices, right? And love through what means? Through charity or through more just structures? Or, I mean, it's very complicated how to answer that question. But I guess for me, the definition of being living the Christian life is to love my neighbor all of the time, as I love myself all of the time.
I get down to real more basics, though, and loving my neighbor, I have trouble loving my own daughter.
Your daughter is one of your neighbors.
Yeah, right? I know. So, yeah. If I have difficulty in my own family, then going out into the larger scheme is...
Doesn't exclude the family, no?
Yes. Almost becomes
or the spouse, or the parent, or the child.
What do you think of my perception that the church... We as the church don't really expect much to happen.
True. Mm-hmm. I think that's true. Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Because we're human. When I think of Noah, Moses, Paul, maybe not so much Paul, but some of the other disciples, did they have all the power that God could have given them every day of their lives? I mean, what kind of people? I think I've experienced the power of God more than once. But there's a lot of times that I would like to have His wisdom. I'd like to see the writing on the wall all the time, every day. But I'm human. I'm a sinner and a saint at the same time.
Okay.
I know that there is great power. I mean, when he talks about the mountains, moving the mountains.
Okay, well, what I'm talking about is what really happens and how we kind of relate in church. For instance, do you see the church as the center of healing?
I think part of the reason why we expect so little, I would agree with you, I think we do expect so little, part of it is because we haven't defined for what reason, for what purpose, for what goal we desire to be changed. It hasn't been, we haven't come to terms with, changed for what? Do we want to be changed so we all feel better? Do we want to be changed so that we can heal the world? Do we want to be changed so that we can lift up our neighbor? And once that becomes clearer, that sense of mission or that sense of understanding why we want to be changed, then we can claim that.
Okay, so when we have more of a sense of purpose or vision or goal, that we are going to feel the need to be changed to achieve those goals.
Otherwise, why?
So when we set our goals low, then we don't need to be changed much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Yes? Did you?
I was just thinking, back to what you said a little earlier about do we see the church as a center of healing. And I think that's an interesting comment. Of course, if we want to get cured of our illness, we go to the doctor instead of to the church. But one of the things we started in our congregation was a healing service.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, to me, it's done, more through healing than, for myself and for other people. It might not have cured their ills, but it healed me more than anything else could.
Healing isn't the same
as cure. I think also,
people have been cured.
Well, yeah.
Some, yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Same congregation.
Okay, I think that's beginning to happen. So there are some changes taking place. One of the things I think why we let go of some of the potentiality of what Jesus is talking about is that I think we had the idea of two kingdoms. And for one kingdom, one the kingdom of God and the other kingdom of the world, our understanding of the kingdom of the world, we bought a way of looking at the world called science, and it was shaped by the philosophy of René Descartes. So it's called Cartesian science. And the Cartesian science has been very useful in terms of exploring the material world. But it said, essentially, the world is material. The world isn't it. And there may be some other realms, but if you want to know what's really real, it's, solid as a rock. And we tended to begin to think then of a person as an it. And our whole medical science began to approach the person like a machine. We pour in these chemicals, or we take this part out, or we cut this, or fix this. And that became what we began to trust as healing. And we began, I think, as a church, to want to be respectable. So we didn't want to claim too much that didn't fit a Cartesian scientific view. And as a result, I think we were very comfortable with saying Jesus did miracles, but all of that stuff was for back then. He was special. He did the healings. He did that kind of stuff. And we can pray, but don't expect much to happen. And part of that, I think, is when we look at ourselves as kind of a mechanical it, I'm this it, it's really hard to understand how God would change or make a difference with an it. So then what we were led to is a sense that it had to be a supernatural intervention in what was natural. And so we, I think, began to say, well, gee, you know, I can't really expect God to do a supernatural zap just for me to change the whole course of nature. And so I grew up praying, but believe me, I didn't really expect much to happen. And I've prayed with pastors, and I've prayed where there's that feeling we kind of go through the prayer and maybe something will happen, but we don't pray, as it says in here, assuming that it's happening already. We don't pray like, man, because we're praying, it's happening. Now, I happened to take part in an evangelism citywide program, and I found that some other churches pray with more of a sense of that than we Lutherans do. And I thought, wow, this is exciting. They really believe it's going to make a difference. So I'm concerned about our Lutheran church. I feel that we bought into that, and we're beginning slowly to open up to the whole role of healing and more. Again, we do it liturgically, which works for us. But I don't know how many of us, when you have a pain or an ache or a need, call up your neighbor, your Christian friend, and say, hey, would you pray for me? Why wouldn't we do that? I mean, wow, what a resource.
We do that in our congregation. We have a prayer chain.
Okay.
Every time there is a need that is identified, often done anonymously, you don't have to share the identity of the person, the prayer chain is activated. And then everybody on the prayer chain gets called and asked to pray for this particular need. And it can be a physical problem, it can be an emotional problem, it can be somebody who's going through a kind of addiction problem, it can be almost anything.
Now, I appreciate that that's happening.
I think it's a growing phenomenon in our congregation.
Yes, and I think it's...
As our healing services.
Growing in a number of different churches.
Yeah.
I was going one step further. If you believe that prayer is going to make a difference, mm-hmm. do you call your friend and say, pray for me?
Yeah.
Now, one of my concerns, and I appreciate the point you're making, that it is important that we deal with being sent into the world and service and so forth. But I think we as Lutherans really need to tend to our own spiritual health. And it's kind of like we assume that we are justified by faith, therefore it's all taken care of, and we don't really need to do anything about our spiritual health. I think we need to grow in the Spirit. We need to discover how we get in the way of ourselves in terms of a real commitment, in terms of feeling spiritually whole, feeling the work of God in us, the work of the Spirit in us. So sometimes we emphasize the going out, and in that is a subtle assumption that we're all okay inside. And I also am concerned sometimes that we assume that our churches are all okay inside, all we need to do is go out and tell them. And we've got a lot of work to do at home, I think. Because I don't think people find us as a vibrant, exciting church that is really on the edge and on the move oftentimes.
That's really hard to be vibrant and exciting. You began this with some meditation time. And everything I wrote down was basically to learn. Things I wanted to learn from Jesus. And you start introducing more music to draw more people into church. You start introducing or having shorter services. You're taking out meditation time. You're taking out a lot of learning time in services. You know, and maybe we're trying to answer it in services, and that's where we shouldn't be. You know, maybe we should be looking at other ways that we're dealing with this. You know, the service maybe should be the time of meditation. We find other things within our congregation that are going to, you know, be vibrant and lively for everybody. Instead of watering it all down. Because I'm a Reformed Catholic, so, you know, I growing up, we never had Bibles in church. You know, the priest taught us everything. Which I feel I missed out on a lot, you know, the Lutherans got over me. Yet a lot of the... traditions and stuff that are carried out in the Roman Catholic Church and go all the way back and stuff. I mean, those belief systems have built up a lot more to the point of what you're talking about, mainly because it's been a carried on tradition, you know, stuff that's been talked about, stuff that Luther, you know, developed. And
yes.
yet we pass it off to be a more vibrant church. And, you know, it's... You're torn.
So,
we need
a balance of a number of things, but an urgency about our own spiritual growth. I think it can be done individually, but I think it also needs to be done in groups where we talk about our lives, our spiritual lives, and share with one another and supporting and encourage one another in the faith. And we also need the expression of worship, and that is another aspect. So, it has many parts to it, but if we really had a sense that focusing on our spiritual life and growth and so forth had such potential for being effective in life, I think we could be more motivated to do that. Now, let me do a couple more things before I finish, because I want to give you an idea of where I'm going. There are some things going on in our day, and God is working in many different ways, I think. The whole development of quantum physics, is calling into question that Cartesian kind of physics that thought that it just about had everything figured out and knew what reality was. And the quantum physicists now are saying, whoa, wait a minute. There are an awful lot of things we don't understand. And it's beginning to open up to mystery and opening up to, I think, a spiritual dimension. At least it's leaving a door open. Cartesian scientism tended to close the door and say, this is reality. You can play around with that spiritual stuff, but this is what reality is. And the quantum physicist is not there. I'm reading a book and recommended it to you, a book called Reinventing Medicine by Larry Dossey. And Larry first had some experiences that he couldn't quite explain. One, he had a dream of a partner's son, someone he knew, coming into the hospital, and he saw the whole procedure of the hospital in treating the boy and so forth. And then the next day there was an accident and the boy was brought into the hospital and everything that he had seen in the dream happened. So he said, you know, what's that about? And he began raising questions and trying to say what kind of reality makes room for those kinds of things to happen, to know something's going to happen before it happens. And then he goes on and he says, he began looking at prayer. And he thought, well, I'll just take a look. He was pretty skeptical about prayer. And he was going to check on some of the studies. He thought there would be two or three studies on prayer, the effectiveness. He found 150 studies. And the more he found, the more legitimate studies, not done by groups that want to prove something, but by scientific studies that really identify that prayer makes a significant difference. One of the studies done was where they took people with heart problems and they divided them into two groups. They did not know which group they were in. And then they had prayers identified of different faiths and different religions. And when each person then was at a point where they needed prayer, they would have people praying for this one group, and no one was assigned to pray for the other group. Well, the group prayed for had a significant better improvement in their health than those not prayed for. Well, they thought maybe there's too many factors here operating. This can't really be. So they took two groups of mice that had physical problems. And one group was prayed for and the other group was not. And they found that the group prayed for had significant improvement over those that were not prayed for. So there have been more and more studies taking a look at this kind of issue. Now look at what the kind of question it raises. What's operating here? What is it? How does one know that something's going to happen before it happens? So there are categories that don't fit science and its way of explaining. I had an experience that has been part of my own motivation in exploring these kinds of things. And I had learned some techniques for intuitively knowing about another person. And what I do is, in brief, just shift my awareness to my hands and sense the presence of the person and the image, let the images come to my mind. So I had been up in Alaska doing some stress workshops. I worked doing life education for Lutheran Family Service and it did all kinds of workshops and that kind of thing. So I was on my way back on the plane and was too tired to read or do anything else. And the stewardess was coming down the aisle talking to people about their hotel and plane connections and so forth. So I decided to see what I could know about her by the time she got to me. And so when she came, I said, I'm playing a little game. I've been trying to see what I could know about you. And do you mind if I check them out? And she said, oh, no, go ahead. You know, she was cheery and friendly, as she had to be, according to her job description. So I said, well, the first image that comes to my mind is that there's a man in your life, and he's sitting at a desk, and he has accounting papers in front of him. She said, well, I'm getting a divorce, but my husband is a banker. Okay. I said, the second image is that there's something going on around your heart, some heart trouble. She says, I'm not aware of a physical problem, but I've had a lot of heartache the last couple of years. The third image I said is, I see you taking care of two small children. And I asked, and you haven't had a baby. She says, you're right, I haven't had a baby, and I'm living with my sister, helping her take care of her two small children. I said, the fourth image is that you're on your way to visit some friends in Portland, and that one of your friends' name is Laura. She said, I'm going to get off the plane in Portland to go visit some friends. You're right. Now, I had no idea that she would be getting off. But none of my friends' name is Laura that I'm going to visit. And she said, I do have a friend in Alaska named Laura. I said, oh, okay. That's what came to me. Interesting. And she had to go on. So I was coming off the airplane, and there she was standing waiting for me. She said, hey, how did you do that? And so we were walking into the airport, and I was explaining to her some of what I had done, and all of a sudden a gal comes running up to her and gives her a great big hug. And she turns to me and she said, I want you to meet my friend Laura. See, now what could possibly be an explanation for that? Something she had no knowledge of, I had no way of knowing, and yet I knew. Well, that's a little what Larry Dossey is dealing with. And what he was writing about here is that there is a big conference of research people at Harvard University, and he talks about how radical this is. He said, a few years ago, if you said you were interested in prayer research and psychic research, they would say that's the best way to get drummed out of the profession and have a short tenure wherever you're at and be called crazy in a few things. So what he talks about is the growing appreciation. For instance, Harvard had a whole conference on religion and health. And so quantum physics, I think the whole medical field, the research on prayer, bringing together all the anecdotal evidence that we have of people having experiences. Like I just said, one experience happened right here at Holden. A friend of mine was here and bolted up in the middle of the night and felt a panic and a pain. And that was the moment at which her sister was killed in Alaska in an automobile accident. And yet she knew something horrible had happened and wasn't clear on exactly what. So I raise this to say Jesus seemed to be aware of a lot of this potentiality and how we could make use of it when we really sought to serve the Lord. And that's what it's all tied to, that when we really are serving the Lord can work with us, and far more can be accomplished. And you say, what kind of use? Well, one of the things he suggests is that in the diagnosis of disease for doctors, if they learn intuitive knowing, often they can diagnose much better beyond the tests that they have. So this week, what I want to do is say there's a whole different realm of what reality is that I think Jesus was aware of. I think we're becoming aware of it. And it helps make the powerful transformation of the Christian faith all the more powerful, and I think can raise our level to really expect what Jesus was offering, to change us into tremendous witnesses in this world with the power to affect the future. So I'd like to share that with you as we go on in my sessions, and appreciate you being here. The bell's about to ring, so have a good dinner.
Thank you. How's that Dossey spell?
D-O-S-S-E-Y.
Oh, pretty cool.
And they may have it in the bookstore. I haven't had a chance to check.